welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Matt Enders, Tony Bemis, and Mary Tomich.
This is Tony Bemis,
Matt Enders,
and Mary Tomich.
Episode 66.
9 million miles from a pappus. No, I was instructed before the show started that I was going to be required to explain what that meant because
yes.
It's a little obtuse and perhaps
not
esoteric.
Not obtuse, yeah, esoteric.
Esoteric. And Apophis is an asteroid that, according to some...
And an Egyptian god, but go ahead.
Yes, of death. Which, according to some scientists, was slated to strike the Earth sometime in the next, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. But I believe it passed, a few days ago, it passed by 9 million miles away. And they then did some additional calculations and discovered that it probably won't strike us.
Yes, in 2036.
That's right. So, anyway, that's the name of the show, 9 million miles to Apophis.
All right.
Okay, well, let's catch up and see what kinds of interesting open source Linux-y type things happened this week to you, Matt.
What happened to me
or
this week?
Or just general work stuff, because it doesn't have to have anything to do with Linux. Just your work stuff is pretty interesting.
Nothing really, really nifty happened this week.
It's only because you worked 3 days.
Had an rsync that I did a refresher on that had been sitting there for like a month.
Okay.
And then the guy installed it, and then he had problems with installing it. So I don't know.
Was it rsyncing to the right drive?
Yes.
Alright. Sorry.
So I don't know what the issue was. It wasn't clear from the emails, but. I did that. That's about it. I mean, it was a really, you know, we got in 100 more Dell servers, R410s.
Wow. 100 more?
Yeah, and we got 50 more coming.
Yeah, that's a lot of servers.
Wow. Well, we're sending a big bunch to Australia. We're opening a presence in Australia.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's pretty good.
Yeah, going over the pond.
Well, we have a presence in we have a presence,
bigger pond,
the bigger one. Yeah.
No, yeah, we have a presence in England already.
Do you?
Yeah.
Wow.
You have a presence in England.
Yeah, we have.
Racks could say a number of different things.
We own racks.
Oh, okay.
We own racks in a data center in the UK.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, we have a presence in England. We have Las Vegas, Charlotte. Here in the Detroit Metro is where our home office is.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Excellent. So,
and now we're opening one in Australia.
Okay. Are you going to be traveling?
No. You don't go there. We send in the equipment. They rack it all up.
Oh, they rack it all up, and then you remote in and set it up. Okay. Great.
Is that something like you guys are coloing with somebody over there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just like...
Where other...
Other places colo with us, too.
Right.
And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So that they can get multiple data center presences around the...
Yeah.
Universe.
Yeah, and having it across the ocean is good, because if the ocean line goes down, then people, you know.
Well, it's just better for response times and stuff if you're trying to serve Asia.
Yeah.
To have something in Asia.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people don't realize it, but Australia is there.
I've known it for years.
Yeah. No, they just don't think about it because it's an English-speaking country.
Oh, okay.
But it's actually in that part of the world, and it's really safe to put it there because they have a stable government.
That's right. And I think they're doing well these days, so all the better.
Yeah, all right.
So, all right there,
so
Mr.
Then,
T.
This week, I fought off a cold, and just yesterday my voice came back.
Well, that's good.
I sound like a frog
just
all week
time.
Long.
Just in time.
Yeah.
Well, if you listen to you very closely, it does sound a little bit, but good to have your voice back. I know that feeling.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I felt like I was yelling to everybody just for them to hear me.
And then that kind of makes it worse on your vocal cords and all that.
Right. But even more important, just after the show last week, I got my Raspberry Pi working.
Oh, notice
no,
that.
No,
Pi.
No, no. Oh, yeah, this is my Raspberry Pi.
Tell us about it.
I already had the SD card image ready, so I just popped it in there. And I went to plug everything in, and I couldn't find my HDMI cable.
You could have used mine. I was going to leave them.
Well, after about 20 minutes looking, it was right where I thought it was. It was just in between two things instead of underneath it. It was between a keyboard and a piece of paper, which I thought it was under the keyboard. Anyway.
So you got that, Matt?
So we kept lifting up the keyboard. And...
Exactly. Yeah, I kept on looking there, but anyway.
Okay. All right.
So it took me about 20 minutes to get everything working and plugged it in, started watching movies.
How much
movies.
Configuration did you have to do?
Zero. Just plug, or I had to set.
Well, because you already had the SD card set up.
Yeah. I had to set the time zone.
What distro did you put on there? Raspbian?
OpenELEC.
OpenELEC.
That's with XBNC already installed and everything. It was ready to go. So it was fast. I mean,
you just put it on there and...
Yeah,
when can I get my Raspberry Pi back?
The image was...
Yeah.
Excellent. Was really easy. You just put install SD. It was script. I copied it all there. You go through and double check some of the config files.
Sure,
but
sure.
Yeah, it worked great.
And you were able to show movies on how big of a screen were you using?
Yeah, I have a 32-inch 1080i, or P, 1080p, over HDMI, and it was pushing HDMI and audio. Oh, I had to adjust one of the audio settings.
Yeah. Oh, that is so cool.
I had to adjust the audio setting also. It wasn't doing the audio at first.
Oh.
And I had to change it from one setting to stereo on all channels or something like that. And then it started working.
Oh, because the audio is coming out of the HDMI cable too, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was just one cable running from that to the TV and power and Ethernet.
No, it was sending the audio over a regular audio channel. It wasn't sending it over the HDMI.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, so then you had to...
Yeah, I adjusted it. And, but it works good. The only time it locked up was when I was trying to open a 4-gig file over the network. I had some ISOs of movies I was trying to play, and so those wouldn't play, but...
Some ISOs of movies?
Yeah, ISO. So I took...
Yeah, it's what you
I
make...
I took a movie I already own.
Yeah.
And I rip it into a file.
Right, using Handbrake, probably.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I used DD.
Because he's just making ISO files.
Yeah, an ISO. So you get all the menus and everything.
Really? So yeah, all the extras. Used Handbrake. I've used Handbrake. And again, all movies that I own. Seriously, I mean, I just don't believe in doing anything else but that. But I've used Handbrake, and it's worked for me. But again, it outputs in like a MP4 file or something.
Yeah,
you know?
An AVI or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it's set up. I never thought about using it like that.
Yeah, yep. And
what about what about the DRM? Or, you know, does it handle
still,
that?
It's still there.
Oh, it's all still
You're just
the,
making
all,
a bit-for-bit copy.
Yeah,
DVD.
I gotcha. Yeah, I was...
Well, there's one DRM that stops some of them. There's on the newer ones, it causes problems. You can't copy it faster than 1x. So it takes you 2 hours to make an image of a movie.
But you still can make it.
Yeah.
You do it before you go to bed.
Right. Yeah, let it run overnight.
Right.
So that was the only time it locked up. It played, I had a couple HD movies in AVI format, and it played those. And
wow.
Yeah, it worked really good.
Well.
A streaming music.
He should have gone last with what he did, because you had to go from that really cool thing to what happened to me. Anyway, but keep going. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no, but it's great because I'm a cable cutter, so I don't have cable. And I'm streaming TV shows and stuff over the internet. And yeah,
Hulu?
I really like it.
You use Hulu? Or does that come through XBMC?
I think they do have a Hulu plugin, but I don't have the Hulu account.
I don't need it. Hulu's free.
You can use Hulu Plus, I think,
Plus. I think Hulu Plus is the only plugin available.
Oh, okay.
If I remember right.
Oh, okay. But it's just a website.
You can go to their website, too.
The only thing I haven't done yet is I have some extra plugins that I've installed on my other XBNC boxes. I haven't done that yet. So there's some things missing that I want to get on there. But I figured if I was just testing this and Mary wants it back, then I didn't want to put too much time into that.
Why not? Because you'll have the card for when you'll have the image all
on
the
card.
Then.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's all on the card. All I would get back is just the hardware.
Yeah.
And then I'd ask you really nicely if you could make a copy of it. Yeah, I'll have to. I mean, you know, when I got that thing, they were in short supply, and now I think it's not.
Yeah,
that's not
basically
the case.
Order it
actually, and then the new version, you know,
even has
twice the RAM. Yeah, and SEP256 has 512 megs.
So, yeah, it'll probably play your ISO files, no problem. And, Mary, it won't be a problem for you since you don't use ISO files. You use all AVI and MP4.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, true, unless I think, oh, I can get more RAM. So I'll, I mean, there's so expensive.
I'll buy this one from you, yeah. And you can go out and buy the
use
new one.
Use that as a down payment for my next one. Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, and then you said you're going to show us today after, you know, before we leave. So,
yeah, before we leave, we'll go up there and look at it.
All right. Well, that's very nice. So thank you for sharing that. So what happened?
Okay, yeah, what did you do, Mary?
Well, what I did, blowing my desktop up so you don't have to. No, this week I did blow up my desktop. So I ended up spending a lot of time trying to repair it, bring it back to normal. And again, it wasn't my laptop. It was my workstation.
Yeah.
I had just upgraded to 4.9, KDE 4.95. And the everything was right with the world, but, you know, I'm a tinkerer, and so I decided to try a few things. I tried to change my desktop configuration from folder view to search and destroy. I mean, actually search and launch, that's what it's called. But and it went fine to that particular desktop. And that's through the configuration.
Search and launch?
Search and launch,
I've never heard that.
Yeah, well, what's nice about it is you get a little search box at the top, and then you get some commonly used programs, the icons of which are situated above the search box. But when I tried to go back to the folder view, which is the default that I use, I ended up with my desktop suddenly shifting to the left, a bunch of white space on the right, and then one huge icon. Well, I showed it to you, Matt. It was pretty ugly.
It was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I can laugh about it now. So what I tried to fix it. I deleted my config file, you know, the .kde file, because it would generate a new one.
Yeah.
I ended up messing up so badly, I just reinstalled, and it still didn't fix it.
Because the .kde file was still there.
Exactly. so what I ended up doing is I fixed it in the most interesting way. I did some Googling around to try to figure out what was going on, and all I ended up doing was just deleting the KDE activity that contained my default desktop. As soon as I deleted that activity, you know, from the activities widget, boom, it was fixed.
Oh.
So then, you know, all was well with the world again.
So that's why you just got to use plain KDE without any activities, without any widgets. I don't even use the desktop folder for my desktop.
Well, you are using, I believe that you are using a widget, whether you know it or not, if you're using the Plasma desktop.
I am not. I don't believe. I am not using that folder. That folder is not my desktop. I made that folder die.
Okay. Well, anyway. I'm
die.
Because
die.
It annoyed me.
Did you use kill-all?
No.
Kill-all.
It's kill-all.
And then I went to Django Unchained.
Is the kill-all.
Oh, how was the Django Unchained, Mary?
It was a pretty interesting movie. It's a pretty interesting movie.
I heard that it was correct. A really good movie.
Yeah. And that was way overblown.
We didn't talk about this on last week's show.
I can't remember. Okay, we didn't.
We talked about it off the air.
All right, well, never mind. So that's what I did. I went to a movie, and then I repaired my desktop. And then, you know, did the
So we'll talk about the other thing off the air again.
Yeah, we will. Okay, that's it.
All right.
That is it.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
We have a release candidate on Wednesday, the 9th of January, 2013, at 1921 Pacific Standard Time. Okay. Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.8-RC3, and here's what he had to say about it. The holidays are over, and things are starting to get back to normal, except for Greg, I suspect, who is probably still digging his way out of his email hole, which he was, and didn't post kernel updates until 10:30 Pacific time last night. Anyway, another week, another RC, a fairly normal-sized one. Most of the changes are in drivers, with the bulk of them being one-liners all over that just remove the last traces of dev init exit.
That flowed so smoothly.
But apart from that, there are real updates. GPU drivers stand out mainly Radeon and Exynos, and some architecture work, ARM, PowerPC, MIPS, MicroBlaze, file systems, F2FS, GFS, SIFS, and NFS, and networking, NetFilter, and S SunSpark. No, sorry. Sun RPC, not Sun Spark.
I was going to say Spark. Yeah. That's an old one.
Yeah, I know. I read Sun Spark. It's Sun RPC.
Okay.
The main line's still 3.7. The stable updates on Friday, January 2013 at 10:13 Pacific Standard Time and 16 seconds, Greg Crow Hartman released kernel 3.7.2 with 140 files changed, 1,279 lines inserted, 748 lines deleted. And then on Friday, January 2013 at 10:13 and 57 seconds Pacific Standard Time, Greg Crow Hartman released kernel 3.4.25 with 95 files changed, 992 lines inserted, and 486 lines deleted. On Friday, January 2013, at 10:14 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Greg Crow Hartman released kernel 3.0.58 with 53 files changed, 406 lines inserted, and 154 lines deleted. My kernel developer quote of the week also comes from Greg Crow Hartman. It's a real-time operating system that supports USB and FAT for TI microcontrollers. Wait, I thought we already had one or two of those around here. For free. Why would anyone want to create yet another operating system? So sad.
Yeah. Oh, you know, you left something out, Matt.
What?
On Saturday, January 12th at 8:10 a.m., Matt Enders released a scream when he when he discovered those late night kernel releases. Okay,
yes,
no,
yes, he did.
Sorry, I just had to say that.
But what he's referring to is TI has released a new operating system for their microcontrollers that they just wrote, but Linux already runs on them, so what the hell you need it for, no one knows.
Mm. Wow, yeah.
Yeah, well. Huh. Okay.
And that's the kernel.
All right, thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Scream and all.
That was edited out, though. All right.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
This week, starting off on the 6th, we have Chakra GNU Linux.
GNU?
Yeah,
GNU.
That would be another way to say
GNU.
It. GNU Linux.
Oh, okay. You're spelling it. I'm sorry. I always screw up his segment, don't I?
It's version 2013.01. And it's the fifth update for their Clare project, featuring the KDE 4.9.5, because 4.10 hasn't been released yet. Yeah, and then we are gonna have the release party.
Yes, we are. We've decided.
Yeah, Atwater Brewery, February 6th.
That's right.
Be what there. Time?
5 o'clock? 6 o'clock?
No, I can't be there till after 7.
Then I'll already have a couple beers in by the time you get there.
Yeah, I cannot be there till at a minimum 6, but 6? Probably a little...
Because I don't get off work till 7 o'clock.
All right, why don't we start at 7 and Matt will be a little late?
All right.
Yeah, and are we going to tell anybody where that is?
Atwater, it's in Detroit. Google it.
Google is your friend.
It's 237 Joseph Campbell Street, Detroit, Michigan, and it's not too far off the river. There we go.
All right.
All right. Moving on.
Moving on the 7th, we have Fedentu 2013.1.
That's what you can move on to, Mary.
It's the Fedora Ubuntu release.
Where they mash them together.
A mashup distro. Yeah, okay. No, it's got GNOME.
GNOME 2.
You can use KDE.
Okay. I'm sure I could.
Because regular Fedora comes with GNOME, but I'm running the KDE version.
Mm-hmm. All right. You. And then there's a big release that I'm sure a lot of people have been waiting for is Red Hat Enterprise Linux, or RHEL, 5.9.
Yep.
That was released on the 8th. And then I'm sure we're going to see lots of other ones in the next few weeks come up that
CentOS.
Yeah, CentOS and what, Oracle Linux and...
Scientific,
yeah.
All right, we'll look for them.
Yeah. And then we have OS 4 13.2. Open desktop. And OS 4 is based on Ubuntu, and they have a customized XFCE desktop. On the 10th, we have Pelican HPC 2.9. They're a Debian Live DVD. that makes it possible for high performance computing in clusters.
Yeah.
In minutes.
Yeah, yeah, they're live. You can set up a cluster right out of the box with them.
So Matt, those servers we were talking about earlier, I could take those servers and set up a cluster.
Sure.
Oh, there.
Or set up a cluster. There's another word there somewhere. But
a cluster foul up.
Yeah, there you go. If I didn't do it right. Huh. Okay. Mm. My own Beowulf.
Beowulf cluster is different.
Oh, okay.
And much harder.
Oh, okay. I'd probably go with this. Okay, so.
All right. And then our last release, I'm sorry. We have a couple more releases. Tales 0.16 is released, and if you've listened in the past, you know that Tails is the Amnesiac Incognito Live System.
That's right. I think
which is Debian-based, which is also known as...
Debian?
No. Tails is also known as something else.
Tails is also known.
I did a review of it, too, a few weeks ago. Maybe a month or two ago.
Sometime in the past.
So.
What is it? Oh, I thought it was named something else, too.
No, it's not.
Okay.
All right.
I was waiting for you to pull that one out of your ass.
That's... All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Tony, we'll move on to the next one.
But no, it's for anonymous browsing. Yeah, and then listen to Mary's...
go back and listen to Mary's review.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then our last one on the 12th was Untangled Gateway 4.9. And it's a Debian-based gateway, network gateway, with pluggable modules.
Now, I built that LACRAC, and I got the servers in, and I haven't done anything with them yet. And I was going to use either IPFire. I was going to actually try PFSense again to see if it... Because I think the problem last time was I was accidentally using the 64-bit version and their 32-bit servers.
Oh, yeah, that would cause a problem.
I might give Untangle.
You got it to install?
No.
Oh, okay.
That was the problem. I couldn't get it to boot.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Just looking for 32 more bits.
Yeah. So,
you know, anytime I tried booting a 64-bit on a 32, it starts to boot and it comes up with a message saying,
with a kernel panic. And then it delivers a message, but they were Linux distros. This is BSD.
Oh, okay, I see. All right.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
Okay. All right. At number five, we have Bode Linux with 1633.
And trending down.
Number four is Fuduntu with 1658.
And trending up.
Number three is Ubuntu with 1762.
And trending down.
Number two is Magia with 2059.
And trending down.
And at number one is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 3517.
And trending down.
Right.
Great. I just thought I'd leap in there with that. evaluating the way with which you read those. I guess it comes to that time as to what's on SDA6.
Mary, what's on SDA6 this week?
Well, nothing.
Do tell.
Do tell. Well, actually, this week I don't really have a distro review per se, but I do have a couple of things that I want to talk about, and one of those is a revisit of the Slacks. You know, a couple weeks ago, I wanted to review Slacks, which is, of course, the live version of Slackware. And without an issue at all, I was easily able to boot it to a live environment using the live CD. But when I attempted to create a boot USB stick, I couldn't do it. Remember we had that, then door-to-door geek kind of emailed us about that. So right. When they released last week, I decided, I'm going to go back and I'm going to download the zip file and I'm going to try it again. And what I did this time, and I did it twice. Once with the USB stick formatted as a FAT32 partition, or a FAT32. disk, and then another time with it as EXT4, because I wanted to just, you know, evaluate it.
Yeah.
So doing it with as a FAT32 USB stick, I had absolutely no problem. All I did is I just simply opened up, you know, you download the zip file, first of all. Don't download the ISO and try to do it that way. But you just download the zip file, open up your archive program, just make sure that you uncheck the box that asks you about creating a folder for the contents of it, because you want to unzip it directly to the root partition on that USB, which is probably the only partition on that thing. So I did that. You then have to go into the boot directory and run a little script. Just double-click on it in a graphic environment. You don't even have to necessarily go to a command line to do it. I did that. It went through. And again, I had done that before, and I was successful doing it, but I couldn't get it to boot before. Well, this time, bingo, it went without a problem at all. I booted right up to a nice Slacks desktop, KDE desktop. It was great. And of course, because it's already set to be persistent, and it's, you know, essentially a tiny hard drive, it, all my settings, I made some setting changes and rebooted again to see if they stayed, and they did. Worked without a problem at all. So I then took that USB drive, and I got rid of that partition and just created an EXT4 partition on there, you know, single, you know, just one partition, and repeated my steps again.
Yeah?
Yep. So then I plugged it into my laptop. So it really wasn't SDA6. It was like SDB. and I plugged it in, and I went in there and double-clicked on that little script I'm supposed to run, and it aired.
Oh, no.
Yep, it aired. And so I'm thinking, and I think that's what we talked about before, that the fact that it was EXT4, because that script makes it bootable. And for some reason, it's not able to do that.
Oh, okay.
Now, so that was a little odd, but again, with the FAT32 partition and using it, it went without a problem at all.
All right. I wonder if that's in the documentation somewhere.
It probably
FTM Mary.
Are you RTFM Mary? and O. No, I did go to the Slack site and did do some reading on it. And there's also a little text file that walks you through the steps. There's like three steps. Then they say you can safely delete the file, which I did not do because I thought I'm hanging on to the darn thing just to make sure I got my steps right. But yeah, it worked fine. So I just wanted to put that to bed because, you know, we talked about it last week.
Yeah.
And we were trying to figure out what went on, and I think, you know, I thought that was a good experiment.
Dor had emailed us back saying, now, I can't just let that hang. I have to know what the fix is.
Yeah. So it looked to me now, you know, at least that script just couldn't make it bootable as an EXT4 file system. So.
All right. So I guess he was right. It did have to be FAT32.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it did. For that. So, yeah. So that was fine. The other thing, too, is I'm going to do just a quick mention of a distro that, see, I originally wanted to do a review this week, and I selected a distro called Arinux Linux. Now, what attracted me to this particular distro was the fact that it was authored by a 12-year-old. And I thought, some 12-year-old kid putting this together, this would be kind of interesting. And so I did download it, booted it up. Well, essentially what he's done is he says it's based on Debian, and it uses some of the Ubuntu services. And true to form, when I installed it in a virtual machine, it walks you through the Ubuntu installer. But what this kid did, again, if he's really a 12-year-old, he's really a sharp kid, because what he did, a lot of times when people take and create an Ubuntu-based distro, they just leave the Ubuntu branding in place. So when you boot in, or when you go to install it, if you didn't know you were installing another distro, you'd think, oh, I'm installing Ubuntu. Well, what this kid did is he removed that branding and put his branding in there. And I thought that was a nice touch. The other thing that he did, too, is on the desktop, there was a little icon that showed a little keyhole. And you click on it, a little text file opens, and it tells you what the passwords are. So I thought that was kind of a nice little touch. When I then decided to install it on SDA6, I ran into some problems because it kept thinking that I already had given it a username and that the username wasn't valid. So I got into this loop where I And see, that's what was really odd about it, because I was able to get it into a virtual machine without a problem, but I couldn't install it directly onto a hard drive. So, yeah, I thought that was very odd. But I've seen some things happen in the past where, you know, this laptop uses an NVIDIA card, and I've seen instances where I can't get it to go on my laptop, but I can get it to go on a virtual machine, because there must be, something must be going on there that translates it into something else. I don't know for sure, but, So, yeah, so I had a little issue, and then once that started happening, and the fact that we're recording on Saturday morning, and I don't have Saturday to really crank out, you know, just really work on my distro review, I just thought, this is turning into a drive-by. And I thought, I'm going back to Slack, so I'm going to decide and take a look and see and try to get that working.
Slackware is the challenge. Slackware.
I am never going to do a Slackware distro review. I'm going to do Linux from scratch.
Coward.
No, I'll tell you what.
You know, doing a Slackware distro review would be like doing a Ubuntu review or a Fedora review.
Yeah.
No.
You know,
I disagree.
I
would be reduced to crying. I'd be a crying little girl in the corner because it's just too much work.
No, and I think it's so well known.
I think you're having a misnomer.
Yeah, it's too well known. See, Tony's, the point of the whole review, not to belabor the point, but I'm going to a little bit.
That's it. I will do a Slackware review.
All right, man.
Whoa!
I mean, it's a KDE-centric... I don't understand why you don't want to try it.
Because there's a trick in there.
No, I think it's so well-known that it's practically useless.
You are going to do it? Okay.
All right.
Hey, why don't I do the kernel update and you do the review?
No, I think I'll do both.
Mary needs a break one minute.
All right. So go ahead, Matt.
All right.
Go ahead. Because I still want to do my Linux from scratch project. And by the way, I did take the laptop out. You know, we had used it for the Google Hangout. And
yeah.
I'm gonna take it, since we've got our setup here now and it's not needed, I am going to use that now. So.
Cool. All right.
So I'll be moving forward on that and reporting each week. So we'll see who gets the review done first.
Well, mine's not going to happen next week.
Well, I'm not going to build my Linux from scratch system next week either. I could run into a problem.
Oh, well, then I'll definitely beat you on Linux from scratch.
All right. Well, enough. All right. Well, good. We've got some interesting challenges ahead of us.
Yeah.
All right.
Mine's way easier.
Yeah. I thought you... are you going to use a package manager?
No.
I'm going to
install traditional Slackware. There's no package manager in the traditional Slackware.
I know, and that's...
you don't need the package manager to install.
No, you just install from source.
Just use the Slackware CD and install from it.
Yeah, Slackware is not from source. It doesn't compile. That Gen 2 does that, where Slackware is... I don't know.
It's
anyway.
No different than installing Ubuntu?
No.
You mean to tell me I would end up with a graphical desktop?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. For some reason, I thought you were trying to trick me.
No.
All right. Okay, well, we're going to move on.
Okay.
In the interest of humanity. Okay. In our IRC channel, Lord Rackenwood just asked me about Sonar Linux, which I did do a little mini review on a couple of weeks ago. I thought it was, what was interesting about it, as I think I mentioned then, is that when you boot into it, Orca is running by default. So it's essentially, speaking where your mouse moves. If you were to click on different windows and open different things, it basically tells you what you're doing. So that, you know, if you have if you're using it because you've got an issue with sight, that is a very helpful way to for you to keep track on what you're doing, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say, and I'm not saying it very elegantly. But I think I remember talking about the fact that in LibreOffice Writer, I started typing, and it will read along with what you're typing, but because I'm a fairly quick typist, it was not keeping up with me as easily as I was expecting it
what
to.
What machine did you have it installed on?
This.
Or were you running it live?
I believe I installed it here, I think.
Well, if it was installed on that laptop,
mm-hmm.
there goes my reason.
I have to go back and look because it's a good point.
Because if you're running it live, it may have been a processed or RAM issue. You didn't have enough. Mm-hmm. And if it was installed on SDA 6, the laptop SDA 6, then it may have been a processor issue.
Hmm. But anyway, that aside. Dual core
processor.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. But anyway, so yeah, I did.
I think you can just type faster than they can talk. Anyway, that's fine.
Speech synthesis. So, all right, we'll move on. So that's the whole distro quote-unquote review this week.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
RHEL 5.9 released. This marks the start of production phase 2. It reinforces Red Hat's commitment to a 10-year life cycle by introducing several new features which include hardware enablement, security, standards and certifications, developer tools, virtualization, and more. Vice President and General Manager of Red Hat's Platform Business Unit, Tim Totten, had this to say about it. Our goal with each version of Red Hat Enterprise Linux is always to provide a highly flexible and extendable platform that continues to grow with the evolving needs of our customers while allowing them to migrate to the next major release in their own time frame. Red Hat Enterprise Linux 5.9 is the perfect example of our commitment to providing customers with an extensive product lifecycle, one that strives to provide continued unwavering support for today's technologies and business needs. To download Red Hat Enterprise Linux 5.9, visit here, link in the show notes. For more information about Red Hat Enterprise Linux, visit here, link in the show notes. And for more information about Red Hat Enterprise Linux lifecycle, visit here, link in the show notes.
Excellent. Excellently done.
Okay. And next up, something happened to my formatting, but next up we have... Finally, Fedora 18 is ready. The long-awaited release of Fedora 18 is finally at hand. It was originally supposed to release in early November of 2012, but it was delayed 8 times. At the January 9th go-no-go meeting, it was decided that Fedora 18 is finally ready and we will be available on the 15th of January. RC4 is likely to be the final release based on some final testing, due to the late acceptance of bug number 8140, a bug that causes it not to be able to run in graphical mode when installed as a Zen guest. This will cause a short release cycle as Fedora 19, codenamed Schrodinger's Cat, is planned for late May.
Schrodinger's,
whatever.
Feline.
Yes.
The German guy's feline.
Yes, that philosopher. Alive and dead, same time. Anyway. Major Java zero-day exploit in the wild. An unpatched security hole in the most recent version of Java framework is under attack, according to security researchers. Attack code exploiting the hole can be found in the following Black Hat exploit kits: Black Hole, Cool, Nuclear Pack, and Red Kit. Undesirables are using these products to compromise websites to then quietly install keyloggers and other malicious software on unsuspecting visitors' computers. Kurt Baumgartner, a Kaspersky Labs expert, had this to say. There appears to be multiple ad networks redirecting to black hole sites, amplifying the massive exploitation problem. We have seen ads from legitimate sites, especially in the UK, Brazil, and Russia, redirecting to domains hosting the current black hole implementation, delivering the Java zero day. These sites include weather sites, news sites, and of course, adult sites.
Wow.
So
I'm not surprised at all about the adult sites, but right. It's the weather, news sites.
Yeah, because it's nobody's patched against this. Nobody.
You
can't be, because there's no patch for it. And it's bad news. If you're running Windows and you're using Java, disable it in your browser. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's all I have for the news, but then there's some things I want to talk about. We have the Samba, less important because Windows is less important.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah,
I thought of you.
It was a little like mini interview with
Jeremy Allison.
Mm-hmm. And he's a co-developer, co-originator of the of Samba. And he goes on to explain about how with today's diverse computing, Samba is actually less important than it used to be because Windows is less important. So.
Yeah, but for someone like myself who used Samba but didn't have any Windows clients on the network, I just used it just to connect my, you know, my various Linux boxes, and
because it was easier than setting up NFS.
Yeah, it was just easy to do, and so I'm not doing it now, but. I liked it. I mean, I liked using it. Sometimes it'd be frustrating.
You know, that's a problem with some before is they don't have the full file server in there yet. They've got a skeleton one, but it's not it doesn't have the file serving capabilities that Samba 3 did.
Okay, I'm sure that'll
change. But it's got the Active Directory that Samba 3 didn't have. So And then also we want to talk a little bit about the super over abuse of the copyright system. There's a clip. On it was available on YouTube. Now you got to go to his website. That is a Buffy versus Edward, and it's meant to talk about male female roles in media and show how like they use stalking behavior, and it may portray it as romantic. And his video is actually mentioned by name in a document from the Copyright Office as an example of fair use, and he still had to take it down because they did a DMCA.
What?
YouTube or Google just yanked it?
Well, there's a process, but the process goes back to the complainer, and they said,
okay, we're taking it down, prove to us.
The burden
of proof is on you.
And now he's shifted the burden back to them to get it back up. So they're either going to put it back up or they're going to sue him, is what it comes down to now. If they don't sue him, they've got to put it back. They've got to give him the rights back to it. Mm-hmm. So, but there'll be a link in the show notes to the article on the Ars Technica, which has a link to his site, which has a link to the video.
Yeah.
It's called Buffy versus Edward.
Yeah, it's good. I watched like vampire people.
Yes,
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, right, and Edward the vampire from Twilight.
So you're saying those vampires are stalkers?
he uses culturally relevant media to make his point.
Okay.
And then I have a little trick that's there. I read an article about that we use at work all the time.
Oh, is this your little tool thing?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well, unless you want me to save it, unless you want to introduce that new segment this week.
Our new little mini?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the SMLR toolbox. No, go ahead. We're opening the toolbox right now. So what do you got in there, Matt?
It's an excellent little trick that allows you to put multiple IP addresses on the same network card. And you do it differently a little differently in Debian and a little differently in Linux. But the article I linked to explains both in Debian and Red Hat based RPM based. So the link explains it how to do it in both. Just because the configuration files are worded differently and things, but it's really nifty. Like at work, we put up to 40 IP addresses on one network card on our shared machines.
Wow. And you guys use it so that you can run separate websites from individual IP addresses.
Right. So that your website and my website have two different IP addresses.
Even
though it's on the same machine.
Yeah. Okay. Is there other purposes? Like, why would I do that here at home? Do you know of any reasons? Or like if I wanted to maybe run separate services under different IP addresses, but from the same machine.
Yeah, you could run a separate service on a different IP then, but I don't know why you would want to do that. It makes firewalling more complicated.
Yeah, maybe for testing, I guess. But sure.
Or you do it also for like if you're using SEO. This is again a website thing, but SEO stands for search optimization. Search engine optimization, and. For that to work, you've got to use two different IPs to the website, and they have to be geographically separated, and they have to be not in the same subnet.
Mm. Can you use the same port numbers but on the different IP addresses?
What do you mean?
Like I have a streaming server. Say I have a streaming server that's on port 10,000.
Yes,
but you can, and I have that on one IP address, and then I have Webmin running on another address that's also port 10,000. Yes. Okay, that would be a good reason to do that if it had to be like port or port 22. Yeah, yes. You have to run over port 22, and you want SSH also on port 22 right. or something like
because
that?
Because our web servers, all the web are coming out over either 80 or 443, but they're going out over different IPs.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
So. Link in the show notes.
Link in the show notes.
Well, that's a great little tool. I'm sure that I probably won't be using
it. It's not actually
a
tool because you're hand editing configuration files to get it done. But
it's
a trick. It's a great trick.
Okay, so. Great little trick. Yes. There you go.
And, I mean, I knew about it. We use it at work all the time, but I just didn't know if everybody else knew about it. And I read that article and I said, that's a nifty thing to talk about. So,
well, you know, and just to add this something here, and I don't know if I would call this a tool or a trick yet because I just found out about it, but it was pretty cool. And we're all familiar with rsync. We've talked about it on the podcast a number of times, but I discovered that there's something called zsync. And I don't know, have you ever heard of zsync?
No, I haven't.
All right, what zsync does is that it allows you to, let's say for example, you've got a rolling release or you've got a distro here. You can zsync into a file, like an ISO file, and only extract out of it the things that are updated. Does that make sense?
No.
I'm not following.
All right, I'm gonna look at Tony. Tony, so what it does is it, so in other words, you know, rsync.
The only files that have changed.
Within like an ISO file. So it connects to that file and pulls out of it what has changed.
Yeah. Now I know in the Windows world, like if it has the archive bit on it, then once that file gets changed, then that archive bit
it only
is
syncs
removed.
The files. It only syncs the files that have changed. That's right.
Well,
works.
That's an option.
But here's the thing: is that but if it's inside of a file, does it go inside of? Does rsync go inside of a file?
It goes wherever you tell it to go.
But it doesn't go into a file like an ISO file and pull stuff out of it.
Right. You have to crack
zsync. Apparently zsync does.
You have to crack the ISO open.
So anyway, now the only reason I'm mentioning this is because I thought it was kind of interesting and I haven't done all the research on it yet to make it like an official little tool thing that we'd talk about, although I guess that's what we're doing right now. But I will put a link in the show notes to it because I thought it was kind of interesting and I think that's the way that some of the rolling distros handle things. And the guy that had indicated it had an Ubuntu site that you could go to that will allow this to happen because there's some parameters that you've got to have in place. And once that's in place, then you will be able to update the various packages within your distro like this. Just kind of an unrolling thing. So anyway, I wanted to share that. I thought that was kind of interesting.
You're updating the image.
Yeah. I think that would be one way to look at it.
Why wouldn't you just download? Z-Sync. Why wouldn't you just download the new image?
Well, why would you do that if you can just run if something's running in the background and doing it, and you don't have to do anything?
But once you're installed, why do you still need the image?
But I think it updates your system.
Image? Hold on. You're pulling information from an image a file, not putting files into that file.
Tony said.
Then I'm totally confused.
Well, that's why I'm going to have a link in the show notes.
Okay.
All right. And I kind of debated whether I was going to talk about it before I really had done my reading because, you know, this is a short week and, you know, I whined about that earlier. But anyway, so I wanted to just mention it. It's kind of interesting. I will have a link in the show notes. The other thing I wanted, I guess, you're done, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to go ahead and just talk about a couple things. Or, Tony, if you want to go first, I don't mean to cut you off.
I didn't get any news this week, so.
I guess I will go. you know, we talked, there's been all that, you know, all the excitement, I guess you'd call it, attention to that Ubuntu phone, the Ubuntu phone, which came out right after New Year's. Now, we didn't talk a whole bunch about it, and that's fine. But there was an article in CNN.com about it, and what I thought was kind of interesting is that the article itself, if I can find it quickly, basically indicated that it's going to always just be in the future. It's never Ubuntu's phone, because of the fact that there's a duopoly between Android and Apple, means that that Ubuntu's phone is probably never really going to catch, unless there are enterprise entities looking for something on the cheap.
There's no hardware, and you're never going to get big installing ROMs, asking the public to install ROMs. So that's just the way it's going
to
be.
Yeah. So, well, if they are able to, identify some hardware. Maybe they could. But see, the thing of it is you got to have a kind of a dedicated audience and then an ecosystem with developers and all of that to make these kinds of things work.
Right. And then you'd have to get somebody behind you to sell it. I mean, because even the Google Nexus phone, you know, people have bought it, but it's not big.
And
you have Google behind it. Mm-hmm. You know,
and
if
everybody
you,
right,
but that's
Google.
Android.
Say if you, yeah, right. And if you had, say if they got HTC to do it, you know, that's still.
It'd be different.
I mean, it'd be a little bit different. People, they would sell some of them, but it still wouldn't get as big until they can get, you know, some of the carriers to start it running.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just wanted to, I thought it was kind of interesting that CNN was carrying that, that article, and I just wanted to quickly mention it. Another thing I want to mention too is there's a great little blog out there called My Linux Book. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's a Linux centric blog that's run by a team of Linux enthusiasts. Well, at least that's how they call themselves. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to share their knowledge of Linux, and they're very committed to keeping this blog active. According to the site, the name My Linux Book was chosen because they wanted to fill this blog with as much Linux-related information, such as various tutorials, other kinds of informative-type posts and things. So it's not like it's just, hey, what I did today. It's more of an informative tutorial kind of thing, you know, command line stuff and all sorts of things.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Yeah, so it's mylinuxbook.com. I'm going to post a link in the show notes to it.
Lord Dragonbluth mentions that tool sounds like DRPMs, which are Delta RPMs, which do that. You don't download the whole new RPM and update your system. It just downloads the diffs and then rebuilds the RPM.
Yeah, okay. That could very well be the case. Yeah, and this thing was called Z-Sync. But anyway,
Do you have that link now for, you can throw in the IRC chat?
I do.
Because I tried Googling it, and there's a bunch of other things that have Linux and book.
Oh, yeah. Yep, let me just go ahead and throw that in the chat right now. I hope that's right. There we go. All right, so, yep, I wanted to share that. And then from the SMLR Toolbox, I do have a quick mention of something called Debian Goodies.
Wait. Did you say SMLR Toolbox?
Yes.
Is that something new we're going to be doing now?
Yeah.
Yes, we just talked about we were doing it new.
Yeah,
5 minutes
did you miss
ago.
That a few minutes ago?
I did.
Nothing like outing yourself for not paying attention.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. No, you were busy. I mean, well, you know, you're looking at the chat and all that.
It happens to me a lot.
Yeah, believe me. But yeah, so it's basically the SML of Toolbox. It kind of comes out during our little news chats and little things that we found that are kind of cool. So.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's what that Z-Sync was. I wanted to have it as something like that, but I hadn't really.
It started with
it
my little trick on the multiple IP addresses.
Yeah. So there's
the whole chronology.
Oh, I remember that now. Okay.
you'll hear it when you're editing the show. But anyway, for anybody who's running a Debian-based system, and that includes, of course, Kubuntu, all you have to do is apt-get install Debian-goodies, and what you're going to end up with are a set of utilities that may prove to be helpful for you. For example, if you're interested in seeing what installed packages occupy the most space, all you have to do is type dpigs, that's D-P-I-G-S, and it's going to list the top, I think the default is 10. Now, you can enter a parameter, for example, I believe it's dash and space, and then put a number, and it will then give you the list of programs up to that number. So that's kind of a nice little utility if that's something that you need. It'll also search for example, dglob will generate a list of packages, package names that match a pattern that you've added. But anyway, there's I think about seven or eight little utilities that are built into that Debian goodies. The last one I'll mention is check restart. Now that helps find and restart processes which are using old versions of updated files, if that's, you know, possibly an issue for you. But anyway, so a link to that will be in the show notes. The only other thing I'm going to mention is just I have a quick KDE corner. This past week, Apper, which is the KDE interface for PackageKit, a.k.a. KPackageKit, what a surprise, there's a K in there, 0.8.0 was released on January 8, 2014. I went ahead and installed that. Of course, I need another package manager, like a hole in the head, because I've got Muon and I've got, Synaptics. Yeah. Well, you laugh at a hole in the head. But, okay, but anyway, so I installed it. And actually, it's kind of a nice little system. I did refrain from updating just before the show started, Tony.
Thank you, Mary.
You're very welcome. But anyway, so that's out and available. A link to that's going to be in the show notes. The only other thing I want to talk about is a widget I found called Workflow. Now, we've talked about KDE activities and, you know, what are they for and all of this kind of thing. But Workflow, think of it as a KDE activities widget on steroids, because what it does is it takes and will place on your desktop a larger widget that shows you all of the open activities you've got, what programs are on each window. And if you've got two desktops, let's say your desktop icon workspace has got two desktops associated with it, that it'll list the various programs that are on each one. I thought it was pretty impressive, and I've got it running at home, and I'm going to have a link. I've got a picture of it from my own desktop to show all the various programs on the various activities. So not only will there be a link in the show notes, but I'm also going to include a picture of my home workstation once it got recovered, and all right. Just to show you this. Yeah, and I think you've got to add one of the common PPAs in order to get this. But again, it's called Workflow, and it's nice because if you do segregate your work activity, it's really a nice way to get from one to another. So, and that's my KDE Corner stuff for today. And I think that's really, the only other thing was that DARPA open sources code for building your own amphibious tank. I don't know if you saw that or not, but.
No, I didn't.
I'm going to throw a link to that. That's for all you weekend DIYers.
I saw it.
Yeah.
Did you see the Linux-powered gun that aims itself?
Yeah, I saw that, too. I thought, oh, that's great. This, yeah. During this, during the current national discussion
everybody
that's going on.
Everybody should have one.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, that's it for me. So,
Chatter had put in some news in the chat in the IRC.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He says that, what's his name, Aaron Schwartz died Friday.
Okay.
Committed suicide. Aaron Schwartz was the co-author of RSS 1.0.
Wow.
He co-founded Reddit and Demand Project. He was a former fellow at Harvard Center for Ethics. He was known as a digital activist, and he was arrested in 2001 for attempting to download the complete JSTOR archives, and he was facing a 35-year prison sentence.
Oh, that's why he did it?
That's what it looks like. I'm not sure everything about it, but...
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... wow.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
Is it alive, or is it arch? Now, no laughing.
I'm still waiting to find out what's going on.
Is it alive or is it arch?
Arch, that's right. During this segment of the show, I challenge Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. We twist the concept for this week's show when I challenge Matt and Tony to decide if the name entity was derived from Arch Linux. Extra credit will be given, so there's an extra credit component. Because you can tell I'm kind of stretching now, trying to grab my twist, you know, so somebody can take this over. Extra credit will be given if Matt or Tony correctly guesses whether the distro is alive or dead. So not only will you tell
so
us if it's arch-based.
Okay, first we have to say whether it's arch-based or not.
And if you're correct, you can then boost your points by guessing alive or dead. But if you're incorrect for the first part, it doesn't matter if it's alive or dead for you. You lost.
Okay.
So there's kind of an element of excitement.
So it's
possible
0 points or 2 points.
That's right. Or 1 point.
Yeah. 0-2-2.
Mm-hmm.
2-2.
Yeah. All right. So here are the items for this week's show. You ready?
Go ahead.
All right. Foresight Linux.
Arch-based.
I'm going to say not arch-based and alive.
Well, I'll guess if I'm right. If I'm not right, I'm not going to guess.
Oh. Yeah, okay. So you're saying... All right. Yeah. Give me both so that you'll either get... In other words...
Oh, it's arch-based and alive.
Okay, and you're saying it's not arch-based and alive.
Right.
Okay, Foresight Linux is a desktop operating system based on RPath Linux, featuring an intuitive user interface and showcasing the latest desktop software. So it's not. So you get 2 points. Ooh. Matt gets zero. Matt, I'm very sorry.
No, you're not, but that's okay.
All right, the next one is Crunchbang Linux.
Oh, Arch-based and alive.
Crunchbang?
Crunchbang.
I forgot. I think it is, yeah. And I know it's live.
Ah, there. See, that was a trick question. You're thinking of Archbang, I think. Crunchbang Linux is a Debian-based distro.
Oh, you're right. I am thinking of Archbang.
And I thought, and I did that on purpose because I thought, let's see if these guys...
Oh, man, you screwed me up. I was thinking it was Debian, but I went ahead.
I was totally
conviction,
thinking.
Conviction convinces.
I was totally thinking of Archbang.
I knew.
Correct.
And I thought, you know, I'm going to throw Crunchbang in there because it's going to, somebody's going to bite on that.
Yeah, I did.
And then Tony, you went
a
right
bit hard.
In.
I did.
You could have just really leaped out.
I could have.
I bit hard and took Tony with me.
All right. So the next one is Kahel OS. K-A-H-E-L OS.
Yeah, that is Arch-based, and it is dead.
I have no clue. So I'll follow Matt. It is, and dead.
All right. Kahel OS is a Linux distribution based on Arch. You almost started saying,
No, because I did say, because it's alive.
It's alive, yeah. So you both get a point, because it is based on Arch, but it is alive. I went to their website, there's a link to download it. It comes with pre-configured GNOME as the desktop, and Epiphany web browser, GIMP image manipulation program, and other popular GTK and GNOME applications. All right, you ready for the next one? Firefly Linux.
I'm going to say no and alive. No, I think it's dead.
I'm going to go with yes and dead.
I'm recording your answers here. All right. Firefly Linux was, so now you know, whoever said dead is right, a lightweight operating system designed with netbooks in mind. Based on Arch Linux, it came with the small and fast LXDE. So, Matt, you are correct.
We are tied.
Tony.
No, I have 1 point up, don't I?
You have 1 point.
Oh,
that's right.
Damn.
Because you got 1 point because I think you said it, but you said alive.
No. This one, you said it was not Arch-based and alive.
Oh,
so I get no points.
You get no points,
which
I'm
makes us tied.
But I thought one of the previous ones, I got 1 point.
And so did I when you
so
got
did
one.
He,
oh,
okay. So he,
we are tied.
Yeah, you were a 2-0. Oh. He's a 2-0 for that, you know, respective
we
questions.
We both have 3 points.
And then you're 1-1.
Right, we both have 3 points.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, we're moving on to the next one. Draco Linux.
Whoa.
I'm
going to say no.
I'm going to go Arch-based.
I'm going to say not Arch-based. And I'm going to say...
It's dead.
Yeah, it's dead.
Draco Linux is an independently developed GNU Linux distribution for i486-compatible computers with a focus on simplicity and flexibility. It is not based on it. So you get 1 point, because you said it was dead.
Right.
It's alive. And I got a link to it.
It's
downloadable. Yep, and Matt. Okay. So you're up by 2 now.
No, he's up by 1.
Oh, he's up by 1.
By 1.
I know you guys are self-policing. That's good. Because, you know, I can't count past 5. All right. The last one here. The last one is Parabola GNU Linux, or GNU Linux. Parabola.
It is alive. I'm going to say yes, Arch-based.
Not Arch-based and alive.
Parabola GNU Linux is an unofficial Libre variant of Arch Linux.
Oh.
So I think somebody got 2 there. Didn't
I got smoked out of the water on
it. Smoked out of the restroom.
Yeah. blown away.
All right. So Tony won by a lot.
A lot.
All right. Yeah. So that was our... That was
I
our...
got my proverbial ass kicked.
So we started weak but finished strong as far as the enthusiasm.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
I'm getting excited. Isn't that three-even week?
I know it's two in a row. I don't know about three.
One is like luck, two is coincidence, three is a dynasty. Isn't that how that goes?
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's two in a row.
Okay.
All right,
so
we can always go back in luck.
Yeah,
you first. All right, so join us next week for another edition of Is It Alive?
Lord D was following along too. Do you remember what the answers were?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes, I've got them all here. Which do you want?
Because he said the first one was not and not.
The first one is no and alive. The second one is no and alive. The third one is yes and alive. The fourth one is yes and dead. The fifth one is no and alive. And the last one is yes and alive.
I think Tony still won.
Yeah, Tony, you won by 2-3.
3 points, right? You had three, four, and I had six.
Yeah, you won by like six. 5 points.
Tony has 6 points. And Matt, you have...
I have three.
2-3. Yeah, 6-3. Wow, you doubled them up.
All right. Ooh.
Okay.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140. On to our mail. I had two that I had noted.
Yeah, we had an email chain.
There were three, I think.
I had two that I pulled out, so.
There was that one.
I think Brad getting back to you on the whole multiple desktop.
Well, and there was the first one I have was you posted it because it came directly to you, I guess.
Oh, yes, I did. Yep, and that was from Brent about the Linux from Scratch project and the fact that I am going to start that whole project again since the laptop is free. Obviously, this week there was just no way I could because between work and the short week and all that. So, I think I'm going to start working on that tomorrow and get that ready to go.
Because now you have a long week.
I do. I do have a long week. I have Sunday and then I have Saturday. So
yeah.
I will. So, I'll be reporting on that weekly.
Cool.
So, Brent, so stay tuned. I'll let you know when I crash and burn. Oh, speaking of that, Crux, I think they got a release candidate for 3.0 coming out. Just FYI.
All right.
Okay. What other mail did we get?
Brad was talking about the multiple desktops. And what did he say? Because you guys responded, right?
I was a little inebriated. We got into a whole big conversation about a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, but you typed, your typing wasn't too bad there for the most part.
Well, that's because there's spell correct and I can go back before it's in.
Okay, yeah, that's true. That's true, you can. So,
Brad just says that he likes different desktops and.
Oh, he also said though too. One thing that he forgot to mention is that if you we're talking about rsync and all of that, check out Backup PC, and he included a link to it.
Oh yeah.
He says you can set it up as a server to do backups on a variety of host types using protocol. The protocols above. That's rsync, tar, SMB.
That would be an awesome one to run a Raspberry Pi with. You plug like an external hard drive into it, run Raspberry Pi as a backup PC, and then
hook a whole shelf up to it, a whole drive shelf up to it.
Yeah, that would be really good.
Yeah, so I'm going to just post that link out there into the IRC chat. And of course, it'll be in the show notes too.
Yeah.
So
only if you put it there.
That's true. I'm going to need to do that. So I will do that. That was from Brad. I think I did start to try to install that. I'm going to have to go back and take a look because I couldn't get to mine.
Yeah,
because
he says he uses four desktops with all kinds of...
He's very... he's got a pretty high-powered setup there.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that... Yeah, those are the couple that I had. So what about you there, Mr. Tony?
That was it.
No,
okay. I didn't get another one. Else. Oh, there was?
Yes. It was a comment from the website.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I didn't see that at all.
I went to try to pull that out, and I couldn't find it.
It comes right to my email. It's from Pineview Farm
Oh, yeah.
I missed that.
It's a pingback.
Yeah, pingback. Somebody referred to our website from there.
Oh, okay.
Website. And it's that link that Matt posted about a video.
Yeah.
Which video was that?
It was the Windows 8, unusable.
Oh, yeah.
I watched that. That was funny. And the guys at work watched it with me, and they liked that, too.
Yeah, completely unusable.
Speaking of that, I'm going to tell you something. I just talked to one of my neighbors. Now, here's an example. People who are accustomed to computers and are fairly savvy, or at least, you know, general computer users and then, you know, the savvy techie folks, are reporting, you know, that it's unusable and blah, blah, blah. I talked to my neighbor who just got a computer and has got Windows 8 on it. So I asked her, so what did you think of it? Fully expecting that, oh my God, I can't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, it's okay. And she didn't really have the reaction. And that goes to show you that the only people that are going to find Windows 8 okay are the people that don't, use computers that much.
Right. And if their only experience has been phones and tablets up to that point too.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, my I little...
I was taken back. I was kind of surprised, but then I thought about it, and then I realized, yeah, it's...
My little cousin got a new laptop for Christmas, and it has Windows 8 on it. And he was okay with it. He was just working along, and that's the first one I saw in person.
What did you think about it? You saw it?
Yeah, I saw it. And I didn't play with it. I didn't look at it, but, I mean, I saw him using it. And it's just the same thoughts as everybody else, is that I don't see how it would fit my work style.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, there's so much more I want to do with it than that work.
It is not. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with Windows, is their big domain has always been the corporate desktop, and this is going to kill them on the corporate desktop.
I don't see that. It's not
usable.
Windows, I mean, my company, some of my colleagues are still using Windows XP, and they're just now going up to Windows 7. I see Windows 7 staying on the corporate landscape for years to come.
Yeah, at least another 10 years. And then by then, Windows will have another release that actually has a standard desktop.
Yeah, Windows 8 is their Vista redone.
I don't know. I just,
you know, it's maybe. Almost been like that. Almost every other release.
It is. It's like every other release is the beta of the next release. Is what it comes out for down to.
So
I hate them. I hate them.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Well,
right,
that's
enough Windows talk.
Yeah, that's true. This is Linux. This is the Sunday morning Linux review.
Rant is also about Windows.
Okay.
Oh, we have a rant this week.
Yeah. Matt's soapbox.
Matt has a soapbox.
So, Matt, what's on the soapbox this week?
All right. This is Matt's soapbox. Warning, this article may contain opinions of mine that you and Sunday Morning Linux review do not necessarily agree with, though if you don't, you're an idiot. Don't let me get away with it. Have your say with some listener feedback. Respond to show@smlr.us. And the title is The Hidden Cost of Free Software on Windows.
On Windows.
And I had a customer's Windows computer the other day that was running very slow. So at first I thought it may be just underpowered. But nope, it had a 3 gigahertz processor and 4 gigs of RAM. Then I thought it was a virus, so I ran 2 offline virus scanners on it. They came up clean. So I said, what the F? Then I let it boot up, a process that took over 10 minutes.
Jeez.
Then I checked the running processes. There were 111 of them.
Oh, my God.
Yes. I then uninstalled all of the crap that they had clicked through when installing freeware. The 2 virus scans took about 4 hours, and then it took me another 3 hours to get the bloatware removed. A whole day wasted because of free Windows software. When you're dealing with closed-source freeware, it is not free. The price it comes with is various spyware and other malware that is installed with it. Then the Scheist gives all free
software...
Which is German for shit. gives all free software a bad name. That is why I am in favor of calling it open source instead of free software. Because you can say, oh, we mean free as in speech, as much as you want, but it's still going to have that stigma attached. Because people are used to that free Windows software that isn't free, that comes with all that other crap that just kills your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just one more reason why it should be referred to as open source instead of free software.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And oh, it just made me so angry to see that on there this week.
Yeah, isn't CNET another one of those big people that if you try to download anything from them, they hide
their installer in it and stuff now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, if something, you know, again, I don't do a lot of Windows stuff, but if, for example, fonts, I can remember fonts. If fonts don't come down as a .ttf file for, you know, TrueType font,
right?
Like it comes in as an .exe, I don't install it. I don't care how nice that font looked.
I agree.
It's those kinds of things. And not only that, but I think in, I want to say, I don't know if it was LibreOffice. No, not LibreOffice. OpenOffice or some Sun. There was some program, that when you installed the, when you got to the one window, the box was already checked for also adding.
Yeah, they always are checked. You've got to make sure you uncheck them, and that's what happens.
Flash is really bad for that.
Maybe it was that.
Everything Adobe does it.
Yeah.
And you've got to make sure you just pay attention when you do the installs and uncheck that shit.
Yep.
But not only that, they also install these other background processes that spy on your net usage and stuff that you don't know about. And it's just crap. It's just bullshit.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, I guess I am standing on the edge of that soapbox with you there. You're taking up a lot of room on that box. Just kidding. But, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
It's just, and it just pollutes the name free software. And we may not want to, open source community and free software community, we don't want that taint, but we have it because Microsoft is so overpowering, and it just taints the name free software for a lot of people.
Open source, yeah. And at work, I've got a little blog thing in our group's work area, and from time to time, I will put a little program out there, talk about it, and again, it's an open source program, and I use the term open source when I talk about it, but it's something that they might be able to use at work. Like I want to say 7-Zip. I think that's an open source, isn't it?
I don't know if 7-Zip is open source. I don't know.
But anyway, there's several that are that I have put out there and called open source software. But yeah, it drives home the point. There is a difference.
There's a big difference, especially when you're talking about Windows software.
Yep.
Big difference.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because that closed sourceness of it just makes it... they can hide all kinds of crap in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
I guess where are we now?
We're at the end of the show.
We're at the end. We have music.
Yes.
We're at the end of the show.
Matt's trying to get past the music.
Featured music of the week.
It's music I picked out.
Yeah. Yep. We're
at the end of the show.
Mary's suggestion. It's Spanish samba.
See, samba? Spanish samba. Yeah. I like that. And it's by Our Spence?
Our Spence. It's Les Cowboys et Les Indians.
Yeah, that's Tony's way of saying the French. Yeah. Cowboys and Indians in French. But that's all right. That's all right. I thought it was kind of cool sounding song.
Isn't it pronounced Lay, even Lay? Though it's got an S on it?
Yeah.
Lay Cowboys et Lay Indians.
Yeah.
So, you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 66.
9 million miles from Apophis.
Yeah.
And we all know what that is now.
Yes, we do.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. It's pushed out now to February 6th, I think.
Okay.
We're still, hopefully the three of us and anyone else who...
Is that Super Bowl?
Oh, you know, I don't even know.
Oh, no. Well, it doesn't matter. I'd rather go to a KDE release than the Super Bowl party.
Yeah, well, it's a Wednesday night.
It's always Wednesday.
So, okay. So you're going to be a pretty long party.
The problem is it a Wednesday where I have to work Thursday?
Mm. Oh, yeah, we'll have to look that up.
I did not work this Thursday, and you can just have to do the math.
Oh, I will do the math.
Let's continue so Matt can finish his stuff.
Okay. So, no, you're not working that Thursday.
All right, then, I'm there.
Wow. All right. And I work from home, so.
Why don't we talk about that now? Where are we going to be? Motor City Brewing, or do you want to go to Atwater?
Atwater, or we could go to Old Miami.
We got
to
decide.
Yeah.
Old Miami. We're going to a Detroit one. Old Miami's on Cass.
For the KDE to release, because I want people to know where we're going to be. So it's more than just the three of us showing up.
Yeah, I think, we can go with either Atwater or Motor City Brewing Works is fine.
Where'd we go last time?
Motor City Brewing Works.
But that's, Motor City Brewing was
on Canfield.
Small.
It was really small, and being in the winter, they're not going to have the front open.
Yeah,
like
that's
they did
true.
Last time, so.
All right, so we're going to Atwater?
I've never been to Atwater.
I haven't either, but it's right by the water.
All right.
Right by the Detroit River.
All right, yeah, let's go there. And that's the 9th, you said?
6th.
The 6th.
Wednesday.
So everybody needs to come to Detroit Wednesday night.
February 6th.
For the KDE release party.
Hey, we should
and
just
have
a
beer
Google
with us.
Hangout there. Just an informal Google Hangout.
Yeah. I think we're going to try. Didn't we try that? We're going to try that for the last
release. I don't know
how
the heck you're going to edit this show. But
well, he's got the time mark.
Yeah, I've got the first time.
All right, so
I'm just
you can
splice
this out
and tell.
Put it. Okay.
Yeah.
RHEL 5.9 released. This marks the start of production phase 2. It reinforces Red Hat's commitment to a 10-year life cycle by introducing several new features, which include hardware enablement, security standards, certifications, security. Okay, let me start over on that. All right, mark
we're
the time.
We're putting it in
reverse. RHEL 5.9. Oh, Jesus.
He's not going to help you.
RHEL 5.9 released. This marks. Now I'm going to do it again.
Come on, Mary.
Okay.
RHEL 5.9 released. This marks the start of production phase 2. It reinforces Red Hat's commitment to a 10-year life cycle by
What? I'm looking the other way.
No, but jeez, come on.
I'm looking the other way. That's our music. Okay.
We're out.
We're done.
We're done.